So this morning, in the conversation after the guided meditation, there was quite a bit of reflection, or kind of a thread that came through that was a little bit of working with things when they're challenging. And so I just wanted to take a little bit of time to talk about that, elaborate a little bit more on some pieces of that, because it is a big part of what we do, we practice with. It's not always possible to just settle back and say, oh yeah, what's happening? That's fine. You know, so learning how to navigate that for each of us is, it's kind of a little bit of an art form, and it's very individual. So the first thing I'll mention, or I'll say, is that whatever familiar tools you have that you know settle your mind, that you know help you, you are welcome to use those when the mind is not able to be present. So all of those are fair game. You know, metta practice, concentration practice, opening your eyes or taking a walk, whatever tools you use. If you, you know, put your attention in your hands and just make contact with your hands and feet, whatever you use, whatever is works for you, when it feels like trying to be aware of whatever is obvious is not happening because the mind is pulled into it, you're welcome to use all of those tools as a way to help you balance your mind. And then when there perhaps is a little more balance, you can explore coming back to see, kind of test the waters. How is it now if I just open to what's here now? And that doesn't necessarily mean, for instance, if you were working with some challenging thing, a reactive emotion had arisen, for instance, that was just so strong it was pulling you under, and then you shifted to working with metta, for instance, for a little while. It doesn't mean that after a little while you go back and then say, well, how is that anger? It's, you might then just, after some time of doing the metta practice, check in, how is it to just be with myself right now, with whatever's here? What's here right now in the more receptive way, as opposed to the directed or whatever practice you were doing? So it doesn't necessarily mean that you like go back and try to work on that thing, because our mind is may now be in a completely different space. So, but you are welcome to use your familiar practices in that way. And what I will say is that before bringing in a familiar practice, you know, if you feel like, wow, I just can't be mindful here, take a moment to really check, kind of, is it that I'm not able to be mindful? Or is it that I don't like what's happening? You know, is it that what's happening is uncomfortable or unpleasant and I don't want to be with it, but there is the possibility, the capacity to know, yeah, that's unpleasant and I don't like it. If that capacity is there, give yourself an opportunity to play with being with it, even just maybe for a short time. Just give yourself an opportunity to stretch your capacity to be with things that can be challenging. We have more capacity there than we give ourselves credit for often. And some of that comes from our, you know, habits, perhaps, or prior habits of meditation of, oh, that reactivity is arising, let me settle down and be with the breath. Or, you know, that hindrance is arising, I know the antidote to bring to that. And we've not really taken the time to explore mindfulness of that reactivity or those hindrances. And so just give yourself a chance to see, is it possible? It can be uncomfortable. But being uncomfortable is not the same thing as not being able to be mindful. So perhaps you might notice, wow, it's uncomfortable, and I'm aware that I don't like it being uncomfortable. And so using the attitude here at this time, checking the attitude, is really helpful. So there's something happening, and often in that moment, in those moments before we might want to shift to another practice, we have a sense of struggle. There's a sense of, wow, it's hard to be present, or there's a sense of struggle. And so before automatically shifting, a great time to check the attitude is if there is a sense of struggle. And so if there's a sense of struggle with, wow, it's hard to be with this, you know, well, what is the attitude here? It's like, well, I don't like this. I don't want it to be here. Something else should be happening, or I'm doing it wrong, or whatever is in the mind. If when that is revealed, sometimes, not always, but sometimes when that is revealed, the mind can kind of go, oh, that's what's going on. I think it's supposed to be different, and it's not different. And the mind can just kind of go, oh, right, okay, I can be with this. It's just this thing happening, and I don't like it. That's what's going on. So give yourself an opportunity to see if that's possible before shifting to some of your tools. Yeah. I have some other thoughts, too, about different ways to explore difficulty. I mentioned one of them this morning in response to a question. So as I said, sometimes when there's a challenge, the mind kind of like locks onto that experience and is only seeing that thing. So it kind of makes that be our whole world. It magnifies it. It magnifies it, and that's all that we can see. Even if we try putting our attention somewhere else, it can go right back to it. And so I mentioned this morning to consciously expand, to consciously remind yourself there are other things going on in the present moment besides that thing. You don't have to like try to not have the attention go to that thing, but you know, it might be something like, so if you're working with, for instance, a painful sensation in the body, and there's some aversion to that painful sensation, so that whole complex is pretty strong, and then you might recognize, okay, there's that pain, there's that aversion, and there's seeing happening, and there's that pain, and there's that aversion, and there's hearing happening, and then maybe there's another body sensation. You'll kind of like rotate through the other senses and let your attention for a few moments kind of step away from the strong experience, because in some ways in that situation of pain and aversion to pain, the aversion is actually sometimes responding to the attention to pain. And so when the mind kind of takes a break from can consciously, even for just a moment, can take a break from being with that pain, it gives the aversion a little chance to let go, to release. And so you can just play with like noticing a variety of experiences, and then you might notice the pain again. And maybe you notice that there's the pain with a little less aversion because there hasn't been so much attention to the pain. So when there is an attitude or a reactivity to something, it's usually helpful to not attend so directly to the thing we are averse to. So pain, for instance, if we have aversion to it, putting our attention directly on the pain will probably strengthen the aversion. And so we can either like take our attention out other experience, kind of just reminding ourselves for a moment, and then maybe the attention gets pulled back, but that's okay. Just keep noticing other things, and then the aversion doesn't have as much chance to get the traction because it's spending less, that the mind is spending less time with that painful experience. Another way to explore that when there's a reactivity to something, is to just see if you can touch into the reactivity and notice that the reactivity is different than the painful experience. Now, this is a little bit of directing the attention, because sometimes when there is, something painful like that, again, the attention can be drawn there, and that may be what feels most obvious. But with the aversion or the reaction in the mind, that's also happening in the present moment. And so we can step back and look at, well, what is that reactivity? And we might begin to learn something about the difference between the reaction and the experience that we are reacting to. And we might begin to see how they condition each other, how the strengthening of reactivity actually makes the whole experience more painful, makes the mind more a struggle with the experience. And when the reactivity weakens, we might see that the experience itself is not so much of a big deal. That it really the pain in the situation is more in the reaction than it is in the experience itself. So these are just a few thoughts, and the checking of the attitude there can help to reveal reactivity that might not be obvious to us initially. And so we can check in and see, oh, what's happening? How is the mind in relationship to this? And if that reveals a kind of relationship, then sometimes it can be useful to attend more fully to the relationship. If it feels like you're getting sucked into the reactivity, or if you're getting sucked into the reactivity with that experience, sometimes we can be with the reactivity itself. Just know, well, this is what not liking is like. This is what aversion is like. It feels like pulling away. It feels like pressing. It feels like bracing, and recognizing that all of that experience is very different than the thing we are bracing against. So we see the difference between what's going on in the mind and how that affects the body, and the experience that we're reacting to and how that affects everything. And then there is just learning that happens around that. And very often, with that curiosity of being with, and I'll use that term again, can we be with the reactivity? Can we be with the experience? With the curiosity of that, there can be a little bit of that space I mentioned of, oh, that's what's happening. And so we do get a flavor or a taste of why it's valuable to be exploring things in this way, to be curious about those places of struggle, rather than to immediately jump to a place where we don't have to work to deal with that, to go to a place of just setting it aside. So that there's this large place in between. There are definitely times when we can just know we can be with experience and it feels easeful. We can be relaxed and allowing that. And there's sometimes where we know we just can't be with it. And so redirecting the attention, turning the attention to something else, using our familiar tools, not attending to that difficult experience, but not with aversion, but more out of compassion for yourself, of recognizing, yeah, that thing is just pulling me under, so not the time to try to be mindful of it. So some compassion can be a motivation for shifting away. But there's a large terrain in the middle, where there's stuff happening and there's challenge and there's struggle and there is capacity to be with it. And there is a trust and a confidence that builds in that exploration of being with the struggle, a learning of how to be with the struggle with a little more ease, and a learning, a seeing how things change when we explore things with mindfulness. And then we begin to have more of a sense of confidence and trust that it's okay to work with things that are challenging. And that gets stronger and stronger, and to a point where it's like there's not much that feels like it's out of the realm of what we can actually meet. And we understand in the meeting of it that it is leading to more freedom. That the exploration of that difficulty, the direct exploration of that difficulty and the relationship to it, is helping the mind understand and shift its relationship, shift its way of navigating, and will tend to move in the direction of release from those reactive tendencies. We don't have to make the reactions go away. Wise mindfulness, wise attention, exploring in this way with this allowing perspective creates the container, creates the conditions for transformation, for a very natural process of the mind understanding how to let go and to release that reactivity. So often I've been sitting with something challenging and difficult and just seeing, you know, the mind so stuck in it, so caught in it, and having no clue how to let it go, you know, just like no idea how to let it go. And then at some point, seeing that the mind will let it go just through the willingness to be there with it. So that begins to give us a sense of confidence with this kind of being with experience. And yet we do have to be honest with ourselves about when we can and when we can't be with experience. And yet, as I said, we often kind of don't give ourselves enough credit for having that capacity. So when there is a struggle, give yourself at least a few minutes to check it out before shifting to another practice or tool. Let's see, there were a couple of questions following on from this morning too that I thought I'd bring in. A question about kind of the broader receptive awareness, the 360 awareness that we used, that language this morning. Are the ideas of 360 awareness and vigilance, hypervigilance, on the opposite sides of the spectrum? Well, I would say that often we think of vigilance and hypervigilance as being some kind of stickiness, like, you know, not like there's almost not an option when we're vigilant. There's not flexibility in the mind. And I would say that, yeah, there is a contrast between 360 awareness and vigilance or hypervigilance, or that sense of being able to take in the wide perspective. But I could also imagine that somebody having a vigilance in a wide perspective. So I think of 360 perspective. I think there's two different kind of scales going on here in this question. One, the notion of 360 awareness, the broad receptive kind of awareness. To me, there's a kind of a range of ways that attention can work, awareness can work. It can work broad. Our minds can receive many things simultaneously, can have a wide context and understand context and internal and external at the same time. It can be aware of a lot of things at the same time. And it can also be like pretty focused. It can narrow down or can pick out one thing in experience. And sometimes even in that focus, like we might be so focused on something that we don't hear something in the room or we don't see something. So that kind of focus is not necessarily vigilant or hypervigilant. It can also be skillful. Concentration practice can have that quality of being extremely focused and wholesome. So I think there's a contrast perhaps between 360 awareness and focused awareness. They may be like on opposite ends of the spectrum. And 360 awareness can be also caught up in, when we're aware of a lot of things at the same time, we can kind of be scattered or we have ideas or views about what should be happening. And so 360 awareness doesn't necessarily mean that the mind has that skillful attitude. And a focused attention doesn't necessarily mean that the mind has a skillful attitude. So these are simply different ways that attention works. It's kind of neutral that we can have that broad receptive attention or focused attention. And then we're exploring bringing in skillfulness to how we pay attention, whether it's broad, receptive, or whether it's focused. So the vigilance, hypervigilance, to me, that evokes some kind of clinging often. That language evokes some kind of clinging. So I think of those as almost two different things. The mind that's either like tight and constricted around what's happening, and that might be tight and constricted around this whole situation is just wrong, or it might be tight and constricted around being focused on a particular thing. So and then there's the mind that's receptive, allowing, able to meet what's here with ease, and that can also be present with that receptive, open, broad attention or that focused attention. So this again is pointing to attitude. So, is the mind at ease, allowing that kind of that's what Sayadaw calls wise attitude. And I plan to talk about attitude a little more tomorrow morning, but so you're getting a little preview. That's what Sayadaw calls wise attitude, that kind of mind that is able to be with whatever's present without having reactivity, without needing it to be otherwise. And then there's the mind that's all caught and confused and reactive, wanting things to be otherwise. And becoming aware of that reactivity, I think Sayadaw uses this phrase, it's by getting to know unwise attitude, or wrong attitude, he calls it actually. By getting to know wrong attitude, we find our way to right attitude. And so curiosity about what we're calling wrong attitude, the attitudes of reactivity, and attitudes are really wrong only when they're behind the scenes and are reactive. As soon as we see them, we can have a mind that's balanced around seeing reactivity. And so there we are in right attitude again. So the exploration of how we are in relationship to experience is really important. And as I said this morning, or as it came up this morning, it's not actually something to keep doing like really all the time. It's something because that can feel a little bit recursive. It's like it can feel like, oh, what's my attitude? And what's my attitude about that? And what's my attitude about that? And it's just this endless stream, and it can get really busy. And so I often encourage people to just from time to time check the attitude. And then it seems to become more organic at a certain point where it's just very natural for the mind to kind of orient to, oh, and what's the relationship to this now? So, yeah, and a good time really to check the attitude or to kind of recognize or be curious about the attitude is when there's a sense of struggle. Because when there's a sense of struggle, there's something going on behind the scenes that hasn't been clearly seen. So, good time to check in with that.